Welcome to Crypto Biz, the business of crypto podcast. Keith Allen, Brad Nickel, and Austin Gaines back at it again, talking everything crypto, ICO, token generating event, whatever you want to call it. We do not talk about crypto trading. That's not what this is all about. This is about the business and the industry that is evolving at a rapid pace. Brad, give him a quick breakdown on who we are.
We are Black Knox, BlackKnox.com. We are advisors and guides to startups in the cryptocurrency space. That means we help people with their cryptocurrency launches, their ICOs, and cryptocurrencies that are already on the market that don't have a clue where they're going and need some guidance and help on strategy, business planning, staffing, marketing, etc.
I want to get you a shirt that says Crypto Sherpa.
Crypto Sherpa, I like that. Is that domain registered?
I don't know. I'm sure you're checking it right now.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure if it's not registered, we're going to own it in the next 7 minutes.
Because it'll go right along with the other 223 that we don't use.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Austin, say what you got to say to keep us out of trouble.
All right. So disclaimers, we are not financial advisors, attorneys, or tax advisors. We're really not advisors of any sort in that realm. So don't take anything we say as investment advice.
Because we're not giving any.
No, we are not.
Today's
don't take us seriously at all.
Today's show, we're going to continue a series that we started a few episodes back, really trying to help people understand what the whole ICO and launch process is all about, whether you're a startup, whether you are an existing business, whether you're holding an ICO or a token generating event, or you're just trying to figure out what this space is all about. We hope that this gives you some guidance and insight and knowledge that can help you make some decisions working down the road. Our last episode, we talked pretty in depth about white papers. And if you're in that process or considering that process, I encourage you to go back and listen to episode 3. We have in, I think probably every episode touched on team in one form or another. Today, we're going to go deeper on team and leadership, and that's going to be the topic of today's episode. Before we jump into that, though, we always like to take a few minutes to talk about breaking news, recent news and stories kind of helping the industry take shape. And today, safe to say, we've got some late breaking news, to say the least. Brad, why don't you kick that off?
So looks like the SEC chairman has decided to not out and out declare that Bitcoin is not a security, but it certainly sounds like it. So Chairman Jay Clayton of the Security and Exchange Commission was asked by Congressman Stewart his view on how regulatory oversight of cryptocurrencies could be split between the SEC and CFTC. And we've talked about this before, that they both classify cryptocurrencies differently. Anyway, his answer was, it's a complicated area because, as you said, there are different types of crypto assets. Let me try and divide them into two areas. A pure medium of exchange, the one that's most often cited, is Bitcoin, as a replacement for currency that has been determined by most people not to be a security. Then there are tokens which are used to finance projects. I've been on the record saying there are very few, there's none that I've seen, tokens that aren't securities. To the extent something is a security, we should regulate it as a security. And our securities regulations are disclosure based, and people should follow those and provide the information that we require. Now, two things that stand out for me in this. First of all is, obviously, he is giving Bitcoin as an example of something that's not a security. But there's something else we didn't discuss when we were talking about this earlier. He reiterates what he's talked about before, where he says our security regulations are disclosure based and people should follow those and provide the information that we require. I'm wondering if he's also signaling with that one that, in fact, if people do kind of the full disclosure process to potential investors, that the SEC will be looking more kindly upon their ICO. Anyway, back to Bitcoin. I think that, you know, what we talked about earlier is that a lot of folks are going to consider this as a get out of jail free card for those that follow the same model as Bitcoin. But it's big news for him to make these declarations publicly, and will likely do a lot to kind of advance some of the projects that are going on right now.
Okay, so you just threw a lot of at us to digest, and one thing I keyed in on is the whole statement about the SEC's, you know, process being disclosure based. We've said all along, right? And we've even shared this, you know, with our clients. Do everything you can to follow the guidelines to the best of your ability, right? Being disclosure based isn't really hard to do, right? This doesn't take a tremendous amount of effort. Now, registering yourself as a security and going through that process is a whole different deal, right? That's a much longer process and a more expensive process. And most of the companies that we've seen that are going through or planning ICOs aren't interested in taking the time to do that, because it really puts the brakes on any momentum.
And it's expensive,
you know, so most can't do it until they have the ICO and have raised some cash. A couple other points he says in his statement is that, you know, this approach is similar to what they've been stressing for years, which is one, the things that would classify a token as a utility is one, a decentralized token may not be a security, even if the token's initial presale did fit the test for securities issuance. And two, factors that distinguish a non-security token from a security are A, usefulness, and B, decentralization. So we have kind of been discussing amongst ourselves, you know, what does this really mean moving forward? And there's still with every statement that comes out, or even any interview, because I don't know that this was an official statement, there's so much ambiguity surrounding every piece of information that comes out that it's still difficult to make decisions that you have a tremendous amount of confidence in, because, you know, let's face it, the SEC has a pretty long statute of limitations. You know, if they want to come prosecute you in 10 years, they can. And so you really want to be cautious and calculated about how you proceed, and do everything you can to A, comply, B, avoid situations which, you know, have already been red flagged. And I'll just throw one unrelated one out, like, oh, you know, celebrity endorsements, right? When you pay Floyd Mayweather a chunk of money, or Steven Seagal, or DJ Khaled, or whomever, a chunk of change to endorse your ICO, that's a big red flag. You know, they're coming after you. You might as well not even start, because they're going to shut you down before you even get there. So it's common sense to avoid those situations. And the fact that anybody is still doing that on both sides, both the companies and the celebrities who are taking that money, the fact that anybody would put themselves in that situation knowing what the regulations are is just insane to me.
Go to Malta.
Right, exactly.
Don't bother. By the way, Malta, a little more news that I was reading earlier, and it's on my Twitter feed. Malta passed all the legislation to kind of legalize the hell out of everything. So anyway.
Okay. Yesterday. So back on topic here, right? So there was another article on this very topic that raised kind of an illustration, and again, none of this is policy yet, but, you know, we're trying to figure out, how does a company go about launching a utility token without putting themselves in the SEC sights? You know, for existing companies, it's a little bit easier, right? Because they have an ecosystem, or at least part of an ecosystem, and say they're going to tokenize through blockchain and expand into another, expand their business offering, or improve their technology and processes, they have revenue streams, they have money coming in, they have something to work with. They're not in the same situation as a startup that's going from ground zero and trying to raise the money to build the platform and the ecosystem. So for an existing company, or even a startup that has some funding behind it, and maybe that's traditional funding, you know, if you can develop that ecosystem and really seed it with tokens to get some utility going and get the tokens moving in the ecosystem, that's one way that you could potentially be compliant. Now, for startups who are launching ICOs and don't have the funding, this is where it becomes a huge challenge, right? So, and they have not yet clarified how that if the tokens were going to go into a utility ecosystem, which most are attempting to do, but what about the classification of the tokens that are raised initially that end up funding the project? I think that's where the problem is. If the tokens are raised to fund the project is when the SEC views it as a security.
Well, yeah, because it's all about the offering you're doing, the marketing of that offering, what you're telling people, how you're warning them. It all goes back to that. I mean, that's really what they're concerned about. What's interesting is we've had attorneys talk to us and tell us things like, well, you know, once it hits that exchange, you still have to worry about it being a security no matter how you got to market. But it almost sounds like the SEC isn't worried about what's happening after the fact. I'm not saying that's the case. I'm not an attorney. This is not legal advice. Consult your attorney. But it almost sounds like that's what they're saying. What we care about is the beginning of the project. How did you launch this? And did you sell tokens? And if you sold tokens, did you disclose all the risk, all the scary crap that you need to worry about if someone's buying your token? And is the token utilized as a utility? All of those things are kind of like, these are the rules we want you to follow. We still don't have anything determined and specific though. So, you know, my expectation is most of the attorneys we work with will still say, yeah, we're not sure. Don't take contributions from the United States unless you're doing some kind of securitized token and an SEC filing.
So one of the many looming questions is, how do companies who are planning an ICO or planning to tokenize their business somehow, how are they able to do that and still comply and become a utility token? Because the SEC chairman used Bitcoin as an example. And Bitcoin is kind of like so unique because there's no central company behind it at this point, right? Yes, money was made by some people early on in that project, and it was so very, very long ago. But pretty much all of the companies who have followed actually have a central business, have a company that is launching these, and are building a platform and an ecosystem around that. So trying to define or come up with another company that's in a situation that isn't going to actually have a business around the development of their token, that gets hard to fathom.
And one of the things that they're talking about is if it's a decentralized network, you know, that's great for utility purposes, but it takes a long time to become decentralized. All these companies start off with, you know, one sole entity in charge of what they're doing. So to come in and say, you know, one of the points being that you're decentralized, you can't just come to market and say, hey, we're decentralized. It doesn't work like that. It takes time to get an ecosystem set up and ready to move. Like they had an example in another article about the difference between XRP and Ethereum and which one would be, you know, safe harbor, and saying that Ethereum is more of a safe harbor because it is become decentralized over the last 3 years, while XRP is controlled solely by a single entity. So there's still, like, even though the statement seems to shed some light and some good news for the crypto environment, you know, when you start breaking down what they said, it's still vague. There's still things that have to be worked through, you know, and it's great that they're getting to this point and there's public statements being made about, you know, where we stand. but there's still so much more to be worked through where you would feel comfortable just starting an ICO and going for it and knowing that you're safe.
Yeah. And to that note, in the interview that we listened to at the hearing was, you know, one of the closing questions was, how can people who are trying to do, you know, legitimate, compliant, honest business in this space be comfortable that, you know, they're compliant, that they're doing the right thing? And the SEC's reply was, come ask us and come talk to us. And they've actually put forth a way for people to reach out and connect with them and see if they can get some guidance on it, because this isn't going to be figured out anytime soon. You know, it's pretty clear that they are trying to navigate their way through this. You know, it seems like we always say, guys, hurry up and just make a policy and let us know what it is. And the more we listen to what they have to say, it seems like they're learning and they just haven't really figured it out yet.
Here's some interesting things that I think are going to come up later too. You know, there are projects that try to set up democratized governance systems where coin holders in the community get to vote on the direction of a coin or the projects that will be pursued by the coin. But does that mean it's decentralized, or does that actually mean that it's centralized into the hands of coin holders? And how do they address that? The other interesting thing is that I've never heard discussed, and so I'll throw it out, is the concept of transaction fees, right? If transaction fees are being collected on a network, typically they'll go to a miner or a masternode or a proof of stake, but sometimes transaction fees are going into a project fund and or a company that's head of that project. So that's another indicator that may come up later on as the legal side of this develops further, that people will want to consider.
More to come.
Don't do it in the US yet.
Yeah, still don't stay out of the US. And I mean, there's progress. There's definitely progress being made over the last month. It's been, you know, tremendous amount of progress, but you know, it's just the beginning. It's still just the beginning, and they're learning. At least they're taking a more open-minded approach in the last 4 weeks. It seems to have changed instead of just saying, okay, everything is going to be looked at as security.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like people in Congress are starting to open up to the whole blockchain and crypto environment and saying, you know what, we really need to separate this and make it so we can, that people can take advantage of the new technology.
Well, they could really help us out by identifying, I don't know, a handful of other tokens that are utilities and not securities.
Yeah. Or give us a book, give us a guidebook. Do this, don't do that.
Some of the pieces of that guidebook are already in place with existing policy. And the problem is it does not support the idea of having a token generating event or ICO to fund the development of the project. That's the big disconnect.
Yeah.
Yep. I agree.
Right. Right. Like, you can't get from how do I fund my project to how do I be decentralized? You have to start
Most
people have with funding your project.
You have to have
money to become decentralized.
Exactly. So you have to fund the project first before it can become a decentralized platform and before it can become a utility token. You know, all of those things have to happen, but they can't happen first unless you have money and you're raising it traditionally.
Well, I mean, in terms of coins that are just cryptocurrencies, look, if you've got 3 or 4 developers who are willing to give their time for no compensation to fork a coin and launch it into the ecosystem, and then another group of folks who are willing to promote it, you know, there is a possibility of launching something without funding, but actually getting traction and being able to actually succeed at it is pretty tough.
So Bitcoin, for example, some people consider, you know, just use it as currency to pay for things. Some people consider it a store of value. That's all debatable. Again, none of this advice. But when it's all, when the dust settles, and it's going to be years before the dust settles in this industry, right? There's now 1,500 plus cryptocurrencies out there. And, you know, do you think that 5 years from now, 10 years from now, that there's going to be even more that are actually being used, or will a handful of cryptos be used to facilitate transactions within all of these blockchain ecosystems, similarly to the way that we see a handful of banks handling credit cards, right? MasterCard, Visa, American Express, Discover. Are we going to see thousands of different ones in 10 years?
I think you're going to see, you know, a few used as currency. You know, there's going to be a handful used as currency, and the rest are going to be utility. And the utility ones is where you're going to see the growth, a strong ecosystem, you know, because it is the most unique thing we have seen, in that there is stored value in a token and a utility. You get the best of both worlds. You can use it in a specific ecosystem, and in turn, you can still be making a profit off of that, you know, while you're not using it for that particular use. You know, right. So, I mean, I don't think that you're going to see a mass exodus of tokens. I think that
exodus. I was thinking more like evaporation and attrition.
Well, there'll be some of that, because not all of these are going to be sustainable. You know, remember, we got to also keep in mind that a lot of these jumped on the ICO, you know, craze at the beginning, and maybe didn't have their ideas, you know, fully worked out. And some of those are just going to die off.
Right. And some won't ever even make it.
And some won't have the leaders to make it.
That's exactly where I was headed with that. Perfect transition into today's primary topic is leadership and team. And we have all in our careers at some point or another had the opportunity to work with somebody who was an amazing leader that you learned from, that was a mentor of some way, shape, or form, was able to motivate and drive a team and get that company, project, whatever, to a successful level and get the most out of their people to get there and help drive projects and companies to new heights. We also have all most likely worked with or for people who we had no idea how they were able to fight their way out of a paper bag, let alone lead a company. And as much as it boggles the mind, it is a reality that there are a lot of people in leadership positions that may be better suited for other things. And it's important, if you're a founder, to understand where your strengths and abilities are and to identify what's best for your company, not what's best for your ego and not what's best for your bank account, what's best for your project, what's best for your company, and to make sure that you have qualified people or people with the capacity to learn and grow to be qualified to do the job that's needed.
Yeah, and it's not about, there are all kinds of personalities of leaders, right? There are leaders who are cheerleaders and cultural leaders who create an environment where everyone's working together. And of course, I'm going to draw a blank. There's a big gaming company that a lot of games are distributed through, who they have a completely flat organization, right? It's got a couple of leaders, but primarily they made a choice that the organization would be kind of organically self-driving, much like a lot of these cryptocurrency projects today. Then you've got leaders who are more traditional, and then you've got, you know, some wildly successful asshole leaders, Jeff Bezos, Steve Jobs, people who were complete jackasses to their employees and treated them like crap on a regular occasion and were abusive to them emotionally, but also had the adoration of people because they were so driven by a singular vision. Whatever your style may be, you know, your success as a leader requires you to be good at something, right? And one of the key things is at motivating people, however you choose to do it. And you've got to be willing to make tough decisions, but you've also got to be willing to figure out how to make balanced decisions about people, about teams, about direction, about strategy, and about everything else. And then, as Keith, you pointed out, you've got to be able to recognize the things you really suck at, so that you can have the right kind of smart people
in place for you. And it's a really important thing. I mean, this topic came up for us today this week because we had some interaction with some team members of a startup project that we had been involved with in the past. And the leader still was having difficulty making decisions and motivating a team on a path.
And to be fair, you know, I think they have some great people and some great ideas and, quite honestly, a phenomenal platform that they're building. But the challenge that they've run into, and many companies run into this, startups run into this every single day, is when too much grass grows in between achievements, right? Too much time passes in between achievements, whether it's a fundraising achievement, whether it's a partnership deal, whether it's a development, you know, or a milestone, people start to lose their enthusiasm and their focus. And it's important to keep everybody charged up and the project moving forward, because especially, you know, in this space, it seems like a lot of companies are virtual, right? There's team members all over the world, literally. And it's not like everybody's showing up to an office every day and can kind of feed off of that environment and knows that they have a task to do. When people are working virtually, it's much more difficult to keep everybody excited and productive and on task and moving in a unified direction. When you hit milestones, you reach milestones, you strike a new partnership, you raise some money, your development team passes another level of testing. Those are all things that people get excited about, and they go, all right, let's go. They get all rallied and they get charged up. And then 2 months goes by and they didn't get the deals that they were hoping to get. And people start getting a little concerned and maybe less motivated to keep driving the project forward.
Look, you may be not having any public announcements at a time because you don't want to make any announcements until you're ready. But if you don't set a course and agenda and internal milestones and accomplishments and things to be excited about within your organization and a path that people can see where you're headed to, then you end up with the kinds of things you were just talking about. People that aren't motivated, people that don't have something to look forward to, people that don't have a vision or a promise of where they're going. And that kills your company. I mean, there's a million things that we can talk about today in terms of leadership, but you know, from my perspective, if you're not the person leading the company with a vision, somebody needs to be. And sometimes as a CEO or a project lead or whatever it is, you may have to make the really tough decision to say, I don't have what it takes to be the CEO. I need to drive the technology because that's my background, but I need somebody that can handle business development, marketing, sales, accounting, operational, legal. I need somebody that can handle all those things, or bring in a COO to handle some of those things. But you know, you're going to have to examine yourself and the progress of your project as you're burning through cash and make the call about whether you're the right person to be in that role. Now, there are plenty of startups that have gone on to multi-billion dollar valuations that were led by people that had no experience running a business. It doesn't happen that often, but you know, you can look at Facebook, you can look at Microsoft. There are plenty of companies where people have figured out how to make it work and how to make it happen and have learned on the job.
Absolutely. But I think where some people get caught up, right, is they go, it's my idea, it's my company, I'm the CEO, and that's how it's going to be.
Yeah.
And that's okay. You know, if it's your idea and it's your company and it's your vision, that's great. And you should never lose sight of that. You know, titles, you know, I'm not one that gets hung up on titles, but some people, I get it.
A lot of people want their credit and you know, that title is their thing.
And that's fine. So you can still be the CEO or president, but being CEO doesn't necessarily mean that you are the person that knows everything. Doesn't mean that you are an expert in every element of your business. In fact, being a good CEO likely means that you are surrounding yourself with people who have expertise in areas that you don't.
Exactly, because there's no way, it's very, very rare that a one person can be an expert in everything that that company needs to be successful. So some of the best CEOs know their downfalls, you know, and know where they need to surround themselves with strong individuals. You know, I mean, there's a lot weighing on you as the leader of your company. And you just can't do it all yourself.
No. And probably safe to say that most try to, right?
Yeah.
Most startup founders, you know, in the beginning, you have to, right? You got to do everything you can yourself because there's no money to pay anybody else. And then, you know, if you have a great idea and you know someone who likes you, maybe you get them on board to help you out and, you know, with the promise of something bigger and better as you grow this together. You know, a lot of teams are organically built that way. But you get to a point where your capabilities level off, you know, the business levels off because of the limited capabilities of the people involved. And you have got to have your eyes open and ears open wide enough to understand what the limitations are, what's happening around you, so that you can help your company, right? Do it not to stroke your ego. Don't be thinking in terms of, oh man, but if I hire somebody, then that's money that I'm not going to get to keep because I'm going to have to pay them. Well, by hiring a CMO or a COO or a CFO to help you out, chances are, in the long run, you're likely to benefit, your company is likely to benefit financially much, much more than if you just try to do it all yourself and save the salaries.
Yeah, you're freeing up time for yourself also, like to network, to push your agenda. You're the founder. You're the person who started this from the ground up. And I think you touched upon something really important, Keith, is because in a startup, you're the founder. This is your idea. You worked on it for years, whatever it may be, to get it to where it is, to where you can start hiring people and you have some money coming in. And then there's a line where you're going to have to make that transition and say, okay, now I'm ready to, you know, loosen up the reins and start bringing in some other people. And that's where your leadership capabilities come in play to make sure that the company stays in the direction where you want it to go. You have to be able to motivate your team and explain clearly to your team what direction this company is going in and how you want it to get there. And then have to be able to take a step back and watch it go through the process and correct individuals when they get, you know, they veer off and the company starts going in a different direction. You have to be able to bring it all back in together and everybody who's working for you and keep the vision.
And if you're starting a cryptocurrency project, there's one other reason you should really be motivated to have the right people helping you and being willing to accept your weaknesses. And your biggest fear may not be the SEC. It may just be a class action lawsuit. And I can tell you what, the mistakes for a CEO in the cryptocurrency space can be even worse in that case than what you might fear at kind of the whole idea of failure or getting profitable or having success in the marketplace. There's a very real threat that there's a set of attorneys out there waiting for you to fail so they can come after you.
So
I mean, I think, go ahead, Keith.
I was just going to say there's another type of CEO that is often difficult to work with, and that is the CEO or project leader that blames everybody and everything around them for failure or lack of success on a project or company. All right.
It's toxic. Toxic. Yeah,
it is toxic. It is, listen, you may be brilliant at what your specific niche is, right? And you may have the best idea in the world. But if you're an asshole and you're going to blame everybody and everything and every circumstance and every variable for deals going bad or things not happening for your company, if you notice a pattern of failure or a wake of destruction and mayhem in your path, you might want to take a look in the mirror.
Yeah.
And typically the people who are like that will look in the mirror and not see it. So you really need to be alert and open to what the people that are around you are trying to tell you. You know, we've all worked with somebody who just wanted a yes man, right? Yeah, you're on the team, but God help you if you challenge me, right? That's a toxic environment and it doesn't do anybody good. The only thing it does is it feeds one person's ego.
That's right. And look, a lot of times the biggest failures that happen in a company are because of the lack of decision-making or poor decision-making. Or ego in the way of decision-making. You know, one of the things I would suggest to anybody that's going to lead any kind of company, but especially a project like this that's got funds from other people, is to find yourself a mentor or a coach that has been in a similar situation as you. If you're launching a multi-million dollar cryptocurrency, your best advisor is probably not the owner of the local Pizza Hut franchise. But the idea would be is to find people that will be willing to help you and coach you to either avoid the same mistakes they made in getting to success and or help you get through the ones you're currently making. But then more importantly, be willing to hold the mirror up to you and let you really see what you've done in the thought process and the decision-making process. And I think that's probably one of the best things that a project leader or CEO can do is to have someone that's already been through this and learn from those mistakes, help you see it.
That's an excellent point, because in this process of starting a crypto company is very fast paced. Like you're not going to get that time to get your feet wet and just try to like feel out how you're going to be a leader. You're going to need to figure it out real quick. And if you haven't been in the leadership position before, which a lot of people haven't been in starting this process, you need someone behind you that you can rely on and say, hey, am I doing this right? How would you approach it? You know, for your years of experience dealing with, you know, different types of people, you need someone that you can lean on.
That's right.
I mean, there's not a lot of time to fix it in the ICO process. Now, after the ICO process and you're building your company, you have more time to bring shape and definition to what you do and staff your team. But in the early stages, you really need to be focused. You need to have some key people on your team in key roles to help move forward. And if you can't afford to hire people, there are people you can surround yourself. There's certainly consultants and advisors who will, you know, likely be willing to come on board. And you need to utilize those resources. If you think you can do everything yourself, you're either a superhero or you're sorely mistaken. Surround yourself with the best people you can. Get as much support as you can, wherever you can get it from. Some of it's going to be free and organic. Some of it you're going to have to pay for. But at the end of the day, it's going to benefit you and your company in the long run substantially more.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hallelujah.
All right. So, Brad, thanks for not being one of those assholes who doesn't listen to anybody.
It seems like over the years you've taken it down a notch.
Yeah, that's good. I'm working.
That's
on
right.
I strive. I'm gonna get a T-shirt.
T-shirt.
Wait, do we need it?
What's this one?
What was our last one?
Crypto Sherpa.
Yeah.
No, that was a domain. And it's only $4,500.
Nice bargain.
That's a master note.
Yeah. Do we need to have a disclaimer that no portion of this podcast was in reference to?
Okay. Did we just bore the shit out of our guests with like our listeners with all of that?
Which part? The last minute or the previous 20?
The previous 20.
I'll let you know. I wasn't really paying attention. I'll let you know when I hear it back in the edit.
This will be the most entertaining part for everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Why do they think that's so funny?
So, Brad, before we say goodbye, tell them where they can find us.
You can find us on our website at blacknox.com. But if you'd like to talk about your project, your ICO, what you might need in terms of advice and help, we are always on Telegram at blacknox. And if you want to talk about the show, if you want to talk about ideas for a show, if you've got somebody who'd be a great guest, you can reach us at cryptobiz. And we would love for you to tell us in that Telegram your CEO horror stories and success stories. If you've got things that you think would be great examples for the rest of the community to learn from, please join us there and let us know.
I just want to hear the horror stories that you've endured in your career, whether they were crypto related or not. I think that could be kind of entertaining.
Yeah, totally. We're not actually going to put them on the air. We just want to hear about your suffering.
Well, we might be. Tell us if you'd like to be anonymous, and we won't mention your name. That could be phenomenal, actually. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. All right, guys, it's always fun to get together. In our next episode, of course, we're going to get back on track here with our how-tos and instructionals to help guide you through a successful launch of your company, your token generating events and ICOs and whatever it is that you're doing to get your idea from where you are into a thriving ecosystem. I think in our next episode, maybe we will tackle the topic of tokenization and tokenomics. What do you think, guys?
Sounds great.
Sounds all right. Perfect to me.
All right. We're locked in. For Austin Gaines and Brad Nickel, my name's Keith Allen. Thanks for joining us on CryptoBiz, the Business of Crypto podcast.